Now, welcome to another episode of the Principal Liner Notes podcast. This is episode 148, and I am often prone to doing this on the podcast where, when I am grateful to have a guest on, we end up having this great pre-podcast conversation, and I realize that my guest and I have, if I'm looking at time here, we've talked for about 30 minutes before this episode, and I, gosh, I'm just so excited that Megan Lawson is here with us on the Principal Liner Notes podcast. She is the director of secondary teaching and learning in the Cincinnati area. Also, though, she is an established author and blogger and keynoter and consultant. And I'm very grateful that when Megan's blog, which I subscribe to, lands in my inbox, it's one of those that I read immediately, and then I may highlight something, and then I'll read it again a couple of days later, because I'm just such a big fan of her words and her work. So, Megan, with the utmost gratitude and humility, welcome to Principal Liner Notes podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Sean, and for your kind words there. And I'm just reflecting on the fact that this is episode 148. Does it shock you when you say something like that?
It kind of does. Thank you. Yeah, 148. You know, this is season 5, and this was I think a lot of, like, my social media stuff. It starts off as an experiment, and then it becomes something larger or longer than what I had intended. So, yeah, 148. That's yeah, I didn't even th- I got wow, I didn't even think about the magnitude of that number. So yeah, thanks for pointing that out.
Well, absolutely. And as somebody who has spent a lot of time in my commute to or from work, enjoying a delicious listen and new learning, I want to say thank you and keep it up, because I have definitely benefited from the many important voices that you've had on the podcast, and also just from your voice as a creator, educator, leader yourself. So thank you. And it's an honor. It's because of that, it's just such an honor to be here.
Well, the honor is all mine, my friend. And I'm grateful for that. And I know that we've followed each other, and we've been connected to each other for some time, and we have a lot of mutual connections and mutual friends. And the thing that that struck me in just kind of reflecting and preparing for our time together, and I'm always looking for places where there are places of intersection, and one of the places where we intersect is that we both have taught English. And I'm curious to see, especially when I encounter another English teacher, and I know your love for words, but what led you to that path in education? What got you to go English? I'm going to teach English instead of biology or earth science or CTE or what have you?
It's a fun question. You know, if I look back at my little self, even growing up, I found peace and solace in journaling. I was a student who had experienced some trauma. I lost my dad when I was really young. I was in first grade. And I remember someone giving me a journal and telling me that this was a great outlet for some of the big feelings that I was having as a little person. And then I remember the first book I ever finished, and it was The Secret Garden. And I remember losing myself and this story of this beautiful girl in this garden and escaping through a book. And then I proceeded through school. I just always gravitated toward the classes where I was reading or writing. And I had some math trauma that I won't get into, but other classes, you know, were not as much, they did not light me up as much on the inside. And by my senior year of high school, I actually kept a journal of every day. It's funny, I don't know if I've told anybody of this. I still have it. Every day of the senior year, I wrote one page because I knew, wow, I'm having a milestone moment here. This is gonna, I'm never gonna be a senior in high school ever again. I want to capture what this experience has been. And there are times that it makes me laugh. There are times that it makes me cringe what I wrote. There are other, funny little things that I could read in there, but I'm really glad that I took the time to do that. And truthfully, I didn't think I ever wanted to be a teacher. And I try to share that part of my story very openly because so many people have these beautiful stories of legacy in their own families. My mom was a teacher. I always knew I was going to be a teacher. I played teacher growing up. I wanted to be a professional dancer. I wanted to go on Broadway. I was classically trained. That was the biggest outlet for me of all. As someone who, like many of us, experienced hard things growing up, that was my place where I lost myself in the joy of dance. But I was also raised by a very practical, loving single mom who wanted me to have a fallback plan because there's, understandably a small percentage of the population who makes it big in some of those arts. And so, I had a very uninspiring start to my teaching career. And in that, I chose it because I knew I enjoyed being an English student. And I thought, well, if I can't be a dancer, maybe I can go back and teach. And I did not start teaching with a passion for teaching. I grew into a passion for teaching. And sometimes I think you have to learn a little more about something in order to become passionate about it. And so, for those, who are listening who might be early in their career, I think give it a little time to give yourself the space to figure it out and see if you really are excited about it or passionate about it. I think we should be a little more honest in those ways. And I think about that for our high school kids too, as somebody who works with middle school and high school level learners. A lot of times we speak about school as this place where like what are your passions? It's like how we talk to me, like, what are your passions? You need experiences in order to uncover passion. And so if we can give kids more experiences, the passion will come.
That is what you just said sounds to me like the basis for, and I know it echoes a lot of your blog and your writing, and that sounds like the basis for another blog post, frankly. That passion is something that you just can't, pull out of your hat, right? And you can't pull out and say, and yeah, we do this thing. You got to be passionate, follow your passion, but that is really coupled with experiences that we, whether we as a leader, or in whatever role that we have or whatever title that we have, that we have to provide that frame for. And so often, I think in education, we forget about that because there is that mania of pacing guides and testing and all of the things that go into the into that whirlpool, which for some is hard to get out of. So as an English teacher, how were there literary works that kind of helped fuel that passion that you maybe a few years down the line or years down the line that you engendered in the classroom?
Oh, that's a fun question. So I started my teaching career teaching freshman English. I taught freshmen in a semester of seniors, but freshmen for 4 years. And then I went and taught seventh grade English. So I dipped my toe into the middle school for 4 years, and which is where I really think I learned how to be a good teacher. But when I taught high school, there were books like The Good Earth. There were Barbara Kingsolver books. There were many books that I loved. But when I look back, I think I needed to find my students as interesting as I found the books I was teaching. I think that that would have changed the experience for my students. I would not say that I feel proud of the high school English teacher I was. I was young and teaching high school, and for that reason alone, I think felt that I needed to be not my true self and extra strict and firm. And I feel like it, when I look at my high school teaching, I was much more of a read this book. I'm assigning when we're, what we're reading, we're going to talk about it. And then I'm assigning the paper and I'm going to break down how you write this paper. I'm going to grade it. And we're going to do that again and again and again. And I don't think I or my students were excited to come into that environment. Now fast forward, I teach, go to teach middle school. And my first week of teaching middle school, I learned very quickly that my initial thought that these students are just smaller high school students was inaccurate. And we have students at a variety of developmental levels with different needs. And I learned to embrace that challenge. And then I learned to get excited, more excited and interested in what they were excited or interested in, and found ways to make class interesting that way versus I love this one book so much and therefore like I hope other people will love this book so much. There's sort of this like tender juxtaposition there between us loving things as a teacher in our content. Yes, that's important because that kind of energy can shape a space. And it's really important what our kids are excited and interested in. And I think I'm not trying to villainize one side or the other. I think we do that a lot in education where it's not this, you know, it's all the way this and it's not that. But instead, embracing what Tani McGregor would call the ampersand, like the yes and the and. Like, and we're, you know, in middle school, I kind of found my groove a little bit about how both of those things could dance together so that I could have fun with my kids and take better care of learning.
You know, that I had those moments too as an English teacher where I would, you know, profess this unabashed love for a work or an author or whatever it may have been. And there, it was a 50-50 deal, you know, and it depended upon the class and it depended upon the dynamic and it depended upon the time where it either would fall flatly with kids and they wouldn't get that same sort of passion. And then I would be deflated and I would, you know, go listen to some sad Frank Sinatra music someplace, you know? or it would soar and, you know, that love, that mutual love and passion would be there. And then, but I would also be fascinated too, when there would be something that I didn't, wouldn't necessarily be invested in. And I knew, okay, I gotta teach this person because that's part of the curriculum or the pacing guide or the unit or whatever. And kids would just jump on it and wouldn't let go. I mean, I recall, I would recall like when I would teach The Catcher in the Rye, which was a, you know, that book that, you know, and everybody goes through a Salinger stage, right? you know, folks from my generation and I was all excited to teach Catcher in the Rye. And this book is, you know, the anthem of the youth and all the things. And then I remember students saying, I really don't like Holden, you know, Mr. Gaylord, he's kind of a jerk, you know, you know, it's just those kind of interesting, you know, kind of flights of fancy. Do you find, Megan, the same thing, same kind of thing, that passion and experience and what we pour into and how people receive it translates into your role as a leader?
That's a good question. Yes, I think I just genuinely enjoy and find people interesting. And I think when that's true, people can feel that when they share space with you. And some of my favorite people who I've encountered as leaders, as mentors, as teachers, they were interesting to me because they were the kind of people that found other people interesting. And I think what's really important to me, and I know Katie Martin has a whole chapter in Learner-Centered Innovation on this titled Teachers Create What They Experience. I think off it's easy to forget that we are constantly modeling, whether it's good or bad, what we believe is good teaching, or a good environment or a good culture, whether that's at our staff meeting or it's at our department meeting or it's at that professional learning session. And so I think it's essential to think about what do we think it's critical to model, and how do we also name that for people so that they can acknowledge, oh, yes, let me make that connection. This is being modeled for me. What does this look like then in my space, in my current practice? What do I want to try just tweaking a little bit for tomorrow? And so that's something that is really important to me. And I could have just gone off on a total tangent. That does not answer your question.
No, that's fine. No, I no, hey, this is informal, right? And so tangents and even if we don't tackle the question, that's totally fine, my friend. You know, you mentioned, and I loved how you put the you framed your writing and journaling, and I immediately leapt to your blog when you mentioned how journaling for you when you were younger, before you became an educator, was that kind of form of peace and solace. And I just love the I love both those words. I love the sound of both those words. I love the assonance and consonance. Oh gosh, English teacher geek moment here. Sorry. Let's everybody's hurriedly turning to their Abrams literary glossary literary terms, assonance and consonance. What are they saying? So anyway, just the blend of those words. And how has that, I would just be curious to hear about the origin of your own blog, and how it has, you know, there is to me, you know, as we said before we pressed record, it one of the things I love about your blog is the intentionality, the reflection. I know, you know, I just feel a lot of kinship in your words. I feel a lot of kinship in your ideas. And it's one of those where I know, okay, I got to read your blog. It's like with our mutual friend Lauren Kaufman. I when it lands in my inbox, or when I see it on Instagram, and you just or LinkedIn, and you have that kind of the beautiful graphic that you pull together, I know this is something that I'm willing and excited to pay attention to. I read it hurriedly because I am a fan, but then I know I have to read it again because there's just all of these, you just have a beautiful architecture in your blog, and the way you frame stories and the way that you frame words and language, very similar to Lauren. But I would just love to hear about your writing process and how you get to that moment where you press publish on your blog post.
A fun question, and shout out to our friend Lauren for sure. And she
Yes.
does make incredible graphics that help take things that feel complex and make them more digestible. Do I really appreciate that about her writing and her graphics? And yes, it's always such a treat to read her writing every week. I've shared a lot of what she's written too with coaches in our district. We have a coaching culture that we're really proud of in our school district. It says a lot about our teachers, the way that they reflect and are constantly open to new ideas and growing. So for me, I actually was inspired to start blogging because of our mutual friend George Kuros. And those of you who have heard him speak, he does a nice job of nudging people to share their thinking with others. And he also does a nice job, though, of encouraging you to write for yourself. And my writing and my blog started with me just realizing that I wanted to capture weekly reflections. I think it's easy. You know, before I started blogging, I used to have this little notebook, and it's this little tattered notebook. I still have it. And it was sort of like anytime I was in a session, a learning session, whether I got to listen to George or if I went to and I listened to Todd Whitaker as a keynote, or if I was reading a book, it was sort of just the greatest hits of the things that felt really important to me in this notebook. Well, if anything happens to this notebook, that poof, that's gone. And I discovered that by blogging weekly, it's sort of an online notebook that is not just for me, but that I let other people peek into, but that I could go back and say, wow, it's interesting. Look at how my thinking is evolving because of this or that stimulus that I'm reacting to. Or what do I believe about this particular thing, you know, that's complex in the world of school, like all things are. And for me, it just is a place where I enjoy sorting through thoughts and ideas and feelings, and then figuring out, it's like my little pep talk for the week. So what am I going to go into this week thinking about? What little way can I, just a little small move or a little small way that I'm going to be a little bit better this week? And I mean, for me, it's like my little sanctuary. It's like my little moment of peace and solace, like I've said, but it also is like a little lightning bolt of energy that carries me into the next week. And there are weeks, I've written every week for the last 3 years, I believe. And I don't dread it. I look forward to it. Some weeks I'm more excited to do it than others. But what I remind myself is that I think it's really easy when you share your writing with other people. Like, I remember pushing send for the first time, like on a blog post, and then posting it and waiting and thinking, ooh, like, what are people, is anyone going to read this? Are people going to like this? And I find that I'm at my best and my healthiest when I'm not paying attention to likes or reposts or comments. And instead, I'm focused on how I feel in my work and what I'm thinking about going into the week, because I made that time for myself.
Yeah, that and I'm glad that you take that time for yourself, because your blog is so impactful. And I know that I'm one of many. You know, the responses that you get, and when I see comments or I see folks retweet or repost on any of your social media channels, it really does resonate. And what I love about your blog post, Megan, is that not only are you just it's artful. So you have this kind of human centeredness that is just so evident, and you balance that too, the humanity of your blog posts with our gig as educators. It just speaks to so many folks on so many different levels. So I'm very grateful that you take the time weekly. Now, I mean, episode 148 has got nothing on you in terms of writing a weekly blog post over a 3-year period and growing. So kudos to you.
Oh, thank you for that. I really appreciate that. I think, like you and I were talking a bit before we pressed record, it's interesting that if I do have a blog post that people seem to connect with more, it sometimes comes from my darker places. Not that I'm writing really stormy posts, but from things that are just inevitable that happen sometimes, or that are hard feelings that are natural when the work is hard, and then how we take care of ourselves so we can get back out there and take good care of others. So I appreciate you saying that, because I feel that same sentiment is what I am getting from my commutes when I listen to you and your voice for radio.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Megan. And yeah, I know we talked a lot about this before we pressed record, and I think, you know, an educator in whatever role that it may be, whether you are a classroom teacher, department head, principal, director of secondary teaching and learning, we have to have outlets in some way, right? To keep that, that peace and solace, that peace and balance in our lives. And, you know, and for some, it may be music. For some, it may be, experiencing the joys of Covington, Kentucky, or downtown Cincinnati. We have to find those outlets to express ourselves, to express ideas. And then when we do press send, I talk about that, or I share that with you with the podcast, that when I'm doing the impromptu morning commute episode, there is something on my mind that I have to get out in some way. And I have to do it in a creative and productive way, to express. And I know you do the same thing with the blog post. We need those outlets, and actually the way you framed it just now kind of echoes one of the elements of your keynote, that, or one of the keynotes that you give, is that our most important work is the work that we do for ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think whether you're a teacher, whether you're a student in, K through 12 schooling, we are whole people with lives outside of the walls of the school. And I think integrating our self-work between work and home and life outside of school, I think makes for more inspired work inside the walls of the school.
That's so true. And we forget that. I love how you frame that we are whole people outside of the walls of the school, and teaching and leading and education, those are very selfless gigs, and in that we are pouring so much of ourselves into others, whether you are leading a classroom, whether you are leading a PLC, whether you're leading a school or a department or a division or in whatever organization that you're in, whether you're an educator or not, I think all of it is we're adding something to someone or something, right? We're adding value, or we're adding a gift or a strength. And, sometimes in the mania, the whirlpool that I was referencing, we forget that we are whole people outside of our schools. And that's one of the things I love about following you and your social media imprint is you do such an artful job of showing that here I am in this this piece of the world, and what I do, and whether you're celebrating something that you're doing in your own gig, but then also just the other things that you share about yourself and your world and what you do beyond the walls of the schoolhouse or the district.
Well, thank you for that. I think it's important for people to see, other aspects of who we are, whether we're a teacher in the classroom or we're a principal leading a staff. I think it makes the work more fun and interesting and more inspired.
Absolutely. And speaking of making the work more fun and interesting and inspired, you gave me the gift of previewing your upcoming book, which I think is coming out later this year, and it's entitled Legacy of Learning and Teaching for Lasting Impact. And you made a quick reference at the beginning of our conversation today to the word legacy. And it's a word that is a recurring motif. Uh-oh, another literary term. turn to fourth edition of Abrams to find motif. But it is a beautiful book, and it is a beautifully wrought book, just as your blog is. And I can't wait for it to land in my hands in print form. And I can't wait to go to a bookstore and to see it up there on display. But please share a little bit about, if you can, about your upcoming book.
Well, thank you. I think the real gift was the fact that you were willing to read my book and share your feedback. So thank you for spending that time with my words. And I stumble over my words talking about it because I'm just so in awe of the fact that you read it and that you had kind things to say about that. So yeah, Legacy of Learning is supposed to come out in mid-October. And I love this question because I think we should practice at things we're not very good at so we can get better at it. And I've not been very good about explaining this book, not because it's some kind of complex work, but because I'm so close to it and I care about it so much. Mm-hmm. And it matters so much that the pressure of speaking about it becomes quite daunting. Mm-hmm. So Legacy of Learning is my way of trying to care for hardworking educators who are trying to sort through a very complex time in our profession. And I think a lot of people say, you know, these jobs used to be fun, or they're missing that joy and that spark in their daily work. And I think the best way I can describe what I intended in writing this book is actually I'm going to make a connection to a TV show. So the show is called The Bear. I don't know if you've seen this show at all, but in essence, it's a story about chefs and the restaurant industry and a family-owned business and trying to, you know, make ends meet and create a beautiful new future for this restaurant. And so there's this character named Marcus, and he is a pastry chef, travels to Copenhagen to go learn from another chef some of the best techniques. And this other pastry chef, Luca, he says to Marcus, and they're side by side working on their pastries. And I think that side by side element being in the work together is also something that comes up in my book. But they're just kind of in it together, side by side working. Yeah. And Luca says to him, because Marcus is asking how he became so successful, and after telling him a little bit about his experience and his journey, he says, at a certain stage, it becomes less about skill and more about being open to the world, to yourself, to other people. And he goes on to say that the most incredible things that he's eaten are not because of masterful skill, but actually because they were inspired. And he says, you know, you can spend, and I want any educator who's listening to this, think about this in the context of school. You can spend a world of time in here, but if you don't spend enough time out there, and he doesn't finish the sentence because we all know what he means by that.
Wow.
And so for me, this book is a way to think about living an inspired life, enjoying our life, not sacrificing well-being and joy and happiness for the sake of all of the things that get piled up on to-do lists or the competing priorities that sometimes are done onto us, and sorting through all of that to say, what feels most important and how do I find joy in the things that feel really important and make this job manageable and fun and interesting for myself, my colleagues, the students I serve every day.
Wow. That is kind of I love the connection to The Bear. And it is a show that my sister, one of my sisters has recommended that I drop everything and watch, and I haven't done it yet. And the quote that you shared is further impetus for me to add that to the queue. But that I tell you, you know, if there was anything to put on the book jacket or summarize or to put the blurb, that kind of nailed it right there. Having read the book and savored the book. that, and again, that's one of the things I love about your words is you frame the gig differently. Because again, there's a traditional frame to put around education, and you, and we talk about legacy and we talk about impact, but you really go there and you balance your own experiences and then you couple it with you know, kind of next steps and reflective thoughts, which again echoes the blog. You know, there are these just kind of beautiful anecdotes or beautiful observations that you put in there, and then you lace it with, okay, this is now it's your turn. This is where I am. Where are you? You know, and again, just very, very much a positive and inviting voice in your words. And so you say the book is going to land mid-October, right?
Yep, that's the hope. I don't have a specific date yet, but that is the timeline. And I'm excited. I'm nervous. Something I tried to commit to in this book is not painting myself as some kind of edu hero or perfect person. If I want to be helpful in any way to even one person, I needed to write an honest book, which means that I have to be willing to share honestly about myself, my own struggles, because I think what we've done sometimes, whether it's like social media or other places, we've shared highlight reels. And we've sort of painted ourselves as these perfect people, and there are no perfect people. There is no perfect work. There's just people who care and are doing the best they can and learning and trying again. And I think if we keep not sharing our struggle, or if we're not sharing as honestly about our work, we've made this work something that only perfect people do. And because there are no perfect people, like, what future is that? What kids can see themselves as a teacher? What teacher can see themselves in a different role, or if they are possibly interested in being a principal one day? Not that everybody needs to want to do that, but who's going to want to do that if you can't see yourself in the work, and you can only see yourself in the work if you see human beings in the work?
Yes. Wow. This may be another podcast episode or a series or a blog, you know, something, but you know, for many years, in the wake of the rise and fall and rise or whatever of social media, this concept of edu hero, I think, has really led down some bad rabbit holes for others and for the profession. And you know, we see these highlight reels, or we see these staged selfies or whatever. And we forget about, or for some reason we fear putting out the humanity. I know I'm guilty of that, you know, and sometimes I'm very careful of what I put out there and how I frame that. But you touched upon a good nerve that, you know, this kind of shifting away from edgy hero to maybe edgy human.
Yes.
Is needed. Why do you think it's that there is that manifestation that manifestation of edgy hero and then this hesitation for edgy human, if you will?
That's a great question. I think there's probably a lot of reasons. One that I can tap into now for myself personally is that being more human requires vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And vulnerability is scary. But I think it's easy to see, if we can be really honest with ourselves, why people aren't sharing about things they're struggling with, or in the spaces that we're in, it's often because the leader has to go first. Mm-hmm. In order to make struggle and sharing more normalized in a space. And so I think for me, that's why I've not fully arrived. It's why I'm always grappling with this, as I'm trying to be more brave. and be a bit more vulnerable, so that I can unlock opportunity for other people. None of us got into this profession to take learning from others. But if we don't create spaces where we show that we're a learner ourselves, that we don't have everything figured out ourselves, that we're making mistakes ourselves, how can we ever create spaces that allow for others to do the same? And learning is messy. And we can't learn and get to deeper levels of learning for adults or students if we don't have that. If we don't have that, we have a lot of artificial harmony, and that's exhausting in and of itself.
Yes, it really is. Wow, that was beautifully said, Megan. Thank you for sharing that. For those that want to connect with you and subscribe to your blog or book you for a gig, because I when this book hits, Megan, I'm gonna be like one of those to say, hey, I knew her when, because I do think this book is gonna be hit. I do think you know when I read this book, or when I finished reading your book, I said I'm ready for the next one. So I guess maybe we'll put pause on following you in just a second, but you know, I know the first book is coming out, and I'm already putting pressure, and I don't mean to, but do you have another book coming? Is there another book? You know, sometimes it happens with writing, you know, where and I know other authors who do this, you know, you start writing something and you go, man, I got an idea here for another book. Let me press pause on this and finish this other gig. Anything after the first book comes?
I love that question. Well, first let me say this. Thank you for what you just shared about my writing. I'm truly touched by that. And in my dedication, I say this book is to the people who make me feel calm and capable. And I want to thank you for being someone who makes me feel capable, calm and capable, and that you would say, wow, you know, that I could even write another book. I'm speechless, honestly, about that. That I just am truly just moved. So thank you for that. I have some ideas recently. It's funny you asked that question. I have, you know, in that quote that I shared about the bear and being inspired by the world outside of our daily work and allowing that to inspire our work inside of the school, has really got me thinking a little bit. So I don't have any concrete plans per se, but I'm going to sit with that notion for a little while, because I feel a spark within myself whenever I'm spending time reflecting upon that.
Awesome. Well, and again, that's a testament to why I greatly appreciate and value your writing, because of that thought and insight and introspection that you put into it. You craft it very beautifully with intentionality, and I think that's why your blog has that resonance that it does for me and so many others. So don't rush anything. And don't allow me to rush you. So, yeah. So I'm with you. If it comes, it comes, and it will come. But for those that want to follow and connect with you, and I know that is important to your work, that when you put your words out and your social media posts, that not only do you know, hey, here's who I am, here's what I have to share. But again, there is an invitation to conversation, an invitation to connection, seeking kinship. I do a similar thing. So how can folks follow you on social media and your all that you bring?
Thank you for that. I do think that one of the best ways to be inspiring is to be inspired by others. So I would love to connect with anyone listening. I have my blog, my website, it's meganlawson.com. I have an H in my name, meganlawson.com. I'm also on Instagram. So if you enjoy memes about animals and different things, you could find that on my stories. I also post my work there. Megan Lawson Blog is my handle. And then finally, I guess we're calling it X now. You can find me there at Megan underscore Lawson.
Awesome. And I'll put all of those things in the show notes and such. And I would be remiss, Megan, if just two quick questions in closing. And I know you've shared this before in your writing, and you share this at the top of the podcast. I am a dance dad, and both of my twin daughters are dancers, and one of them still dances, and actually the daughter who still dances is a big fan of Broadway. I'm just curious, what are those shows, those Broadway musicals that you dream of dancing in or starring in?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. Well, I was very into tap growing up. So I love all of the tap heavy musicals. I probably couldn't even pick one. I have other musicals that I just love to watch. You know, like you use the word dream, and I was thinking, like, as far as just if I could go watch a show every year, it's Dreamgirls for me, hands down, every year. Like, I would never miss it if I could get to it within a drivable distance, as far as being a spectator and just someone in the audience who just feels their soul filled up from good music and talent. But yeah, I mean, I think just give me all the tap musicals. I'm, you know, a huge fan of, you know, the greats over, you know, from growing up. I would watch, you know, Gregory Hines, Savion Glover. I just think tap is such an incredible talent. So
absolutely. You know, when I had hair and I was younger, I was often mistaken for Gregory Hines. In fact, I had a buddy in college that would call me Gregory. So I don't dance like him, and may the great Gregory Hines rest in peace. Yeah, tap dancing, a great art. So I, you know, and as you were saying that tap dance musicals, I was thinking of, you know, things like, 42nd Street, anything.
Yes.
Goes. You know, just that beautiful, you know, Singing in the Rain, you know, not, you know, Gene Kelly was more than just a tap dancer. I mean, the guy was a genius. So,
Jelly's Last Jam. Now you got me going.
Like, yeah, here we go. Here we go. Here we go.
Yes. I mean, I got to see a yes. I got to see an old picture of you with the hair you're talking about too.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll just keep those, pictures, you know, proud to be bald in some way, but yeah. But yeah, now I'm like doing the, you know, dun, 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 dun. You know, I'm grooving here. It's probably good that we're doing an audio version of the podcast, because no one is seeing my dance moves right now, because I am doing a little, you know, just a little Scatman Crothers, Sammy Davis hoofing right now.
Well, that's too bad. I would love to see that.
Well, maybe at your next keynote or something, I'll press it. So, and you also do some keynoting and speaking as well, right?
I do. I really enjoy meeting educators and hearing their stories, and it is always an honor when I get to spend spend time with and share space with different educators. I recently had the pleasure of connecting with the Ohio Writing Project for a keynote, and that was particularly special in that I am an Ohio Writing Project person. You know, I got my master's degree, my master's of arts in teaching through the Ohio Writing Project, and because of all the things that we've talked about with our love of words and being English teachers, and it was just really special to share space with them. And so, yeah, I just genuinely enjoy my work. Gets better when I get to spend time with people. It just does.
Absolutely. And I loved seeing your posts about the Ohio Writing Project just recently. So, and I know that was a really special moment for you. I felt that through those posts. So I was happy to see that. Megan Lawson, for those of you that are looking for a soulful and sincere voice in the space of education, please be sure to follow her and subscribe to her blog. And it is Megan with an H. And probably a good starting point is to check out her website, meganlawson.com, and it is MEGHAN Lawson, LAWSON. I will put all of those things in the show notes, and I'm sure that the upcoming book will be available for pre-order soon, and that book is coming out on IM Press Books, and thanks to George Koros for publishing that in conjunction with Dave Burgess Consulting Inc. And looking forward to seeing Legacy of Learning, Teaching for Lasting Impact by Megan Lawson. And Megan and I talked about this at the beginning or before the podcast. How long could I go without making a reference to WKRP in Cincinnati? And I think we pretty much an hour that I was able to do that. So instead of WKRP in Cincinnati, it is Megan Lawson, Megan with an H in Cincinnati. Megan, thank you so much for stopping by the Principal Liner Notes podcast. And you have an open invitation to come back anytime.
Oh, thank you so much. This was an absolute treat. I genuinely enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. And as I sign off with Megan here, the typical sign off for the podcast, and again, a nod to Megan is don't forget to share with the world your dreams, your visions, your ideas, your blog posts, because you help make the world a better place. You definitely do, Megan. And those of you who are listening, you help make the world a better place. And the world needs your dreams, your ideas, your visions, and your hopes. And this is the Principal Liner Notes podcast. This is Sean Gaylord. Very grateful to have Megan Lawson here on the podcast. I'll catch you on the flip side. Thanks again, Megan.
Thank you so much.